Hi, I'm Al Morton, and before we get started with this podcast, I wanted to warn listeners that parts of it are going to be a full-blown, tantrum-throwing Brexit, bricks out of the pram rant. So let me make this crystal clear. I'm pro-Britain, pro-British business, and pro-Europe. And I stand against Brexit and the damage caused by the Johnson government. And to my friends in the US, stay with me because we're going to take a look at the cruise industry, drop in on Biden in the White House, as well as experience the new British HGV driving test. So strap yourself in, because Kansas is going bye-bye. The name is Bond. Boris Bond. Licensed to kill. Welcome to episode 11 of The Takeout. In this series of podcasts, I take a satirical look at news and politics and explore some of the cultural differences between the UK and Spain. There will be sketches and anecdotes from my time as a professional guitarist, plus a whole bunch of other stuff that may surprise you or not. Okay, let's get started with this rabmongous special holiday edition of the We'll Fight Them From The Beaches Takeout. Before I go any further, I'd just like to remind listeners that a full transcript is available from almorton.com/takeout. We will be examining the role of Dominic Raab, the British ex-Foreign Secretary, and asking the difficult questions such as, which factor suntan lotion works best on excessively oily skin, and what other water sports are available to a government minister when the sea is closed? And finally, why did British intelligence fail to predict the imminent collapse of Afghanistan's capital? Could it be that there was an absence of actual intelligence from our place in the sun minister in charge of, well, nothing really? We will never know the actual details of our Foreign Secretary's Greek odyssey, but in my imagined telling of the story, it may have started on a sun lounger near Crete. Our hero has sent a dispatch rider to collect a takeout. Hello. Oh, it's you again. No, I just want the regular topping. What do you mean they haven't got any pineapple? I don't give a monkeys. Just tell them to find some. How can you call it a big fat Greek Hawaiian bastard burger if there's no ruddy pineapple? Surely it's the main ingredient. Oh, sod it. Just get your ass back here, ASAP. The ice is melting on my margarita. How many times do I have to tell you? You don't need any euros. Use the damn credit card. Of course it's claimable. The Prister's always doing it. You are, of course, joking. How can eyebrows be more deductible than a working lunch? Unfortunately, things are about to take a turn for the worse. What is it this time?
It's number 10, sir. You need to come back immediately. Didn't you get the emails that we sent you? You know, the ones that said super incredibly important, urgent for your eyes only?
No, I didn't. I'm afraid the internet's not that pucker around here. Look, it's not terribly convenient right now. I haven't even tried the jacuzzi yet.
No, you need to come back right now. People's lives are at stake. Someone needs to phone Kabul.
Can't you get Lord What's-His-Name to give them a ring?
I don't think that Lord Goldstein's an actual lord.
No, it doesn't matter if he's not a lord. Just tell him to call the embassy in Kabul and ask if they need a hand or something. I'm going to speak to Bozo about this. I mean, the Prime Minister, of course. He will know what to do.
Hello, is that you, Rob?
Oh, thank goodness. Maximus Nautius, Prime Minister. Just the man I was hoping to speak to.
Yes, your secretary told me that you were up to your neck in it.
Yes, well, I would be up to my neck in it, but the bloody sea's closed. Would you believe it? Look, I was just wondering if you wouldn't mind if I stayed on for a couple more days, pretty please, tied up with bows and knobs on.
Well, you do deserve a well-earned rest. Shut up, Dylan.
Pardon?
No, not you, Rab. I was talking to the ruddy dog. Whilst I've got you on the line, is it true that the picture of Her Majesty, you know, the one that you promised to remove from our embassy in Kabul, now shows her as sporting a rather prominent d*** with graffiti underneath, which apparently translates as my Johnson?
Yes, well, that's right, Prime Minister, but I've already apologised for that. And now to the matter in hand. Those wily little Weasley runts at the FO are saying that I need to come back.
Well, as my old housemaster used to say, id est de quam crustulum saxum.
What?
I'm afraid that's the way the cookie crumbles, old boy. Why don't you get Lord Goldberg to give them a call?
Yes. It's all fine. I've sent a message to Goldstein or Goldberg or Lord Gold something anyway.
Oh, I haven't been able to make him a lord just yet, as his donation hasn't cleared.
No, he's not a lord. Look, he's going to get in touch with our man in Kabul, who's going to get in touch with our man at the Foreign Office, and then we're going to send a plane or something, and then we'll just get everybody out of there to lickety-split. Monday's all right, is it? I'll see you then. Bye. By the time you hear this, Rab may well be gone, as the word on the street is there's going to be a cabinet reshuffle. Or to put it another way, the deck chairs on the Titanic are about to be rearranged.
Iceberg, right ahead!
Thank you.
This was a clear threat to any Conservative MPs that may have accidentally overnight grown a conscience. If they were to vote against the £20 a week cut in universal credit and a tax hike for the poorest workers in the country, they could be bounced off the all-expenses-paid gravy train forever. For those trying to defend Rab's handling of what became by any measure an ignominious rout, I want to lead with a couple of thoughts. Who, on an $80,000 a year salary, would spend half of it on a one-week holiday in Crete? Could it be a gift from a grateful donor? And what Deputy Prime Minister goes on holiday at the same time as the person he's deputising for? The actual Prime Minister. So, with this in mind, I did have a quick word with our friendly fridge magnet Bond-style supervillain to see if there was anything that he could do to remove this stain on global Britain's reputation. Hello, Ernst Boris Blofeld. Would you be kind enough to do the country a huge favour and also feed Dominic Raab to your piranhas?
Oh, crikey, no. The piranhas are still full after devouring Matt Hancock in your episode 10. I only lie twice.
Oh, well, it was worth a try, I suppose. Whilst most people would quickly realise that Rab going AWOL at such a critical time was suspicious, we only need to view the naked Etonian indifference on display as he and Johnson bungled their way around a refugee crisis management centre. Johnson is seen talking to an uncomfortable-looking operations manager. The version broadcast on the news that night had the sound muted, but on social media the conversation was embarrassingly clear.
Hello. Jolly good job, by the way. Did you get a lot of emails from that doggy bloke? I got one or two of them as well. I think my spam filter must be broken. I hope you got some of them out anyway. You do know how much the Brits love animals.
We were told that this undynamic duo would be moving heaven and earth and straining every sinew to get our people out of Afghanistan. Frankly, it didn't sound very reassuring. France had got all of their people out months ago, but predictably, the Foreign Secretary had left the exodus until the last 2 weeks possible. Even then, allegedly, he managed to screw it up by first repatriating the very people needed to process visa applications. No wonder there were hold-ups. And where was Priti Patel in all this? That's right, I kid you not, she'd been appointed the head of Operation Warm Welcome.
You see, Lord Vader, she can be reasonable. Continue with the operation. You may fire when ready.
What?
If she was the Queen of Warm Welcome, I dread to think what Operation Cold Shoulder would have been like. But to be fair, Operation Warm Welcome does have a certain ring to it. Let's face it, Priti Patel is not exactly known for great acts of human kindness. How was she going to pull off such a stunt? Would there be an Operation Warm Welcome goodie bag? And if so, what would it contain? Item 1. A complimentary plastic made in China Union Jack flag. Item 2. A picture of Johnson lying to the Queen. Item 3. A Eurostar timetable and street map of Paris. Perhaps there would be a recipe on the back. Something like the Gordon Ramsay Guide to Cooking with Cheese Puffs.
Wow, that's disgusting.
In an alternative and more just dimension, the rout of Afghanistan would have ended with mass resignations, sackings, and apologetic headlines in the press. But that isn't even the worst of it. Do you need a blood test or a flu jab? Because right now, we're suffering a few supply chain issues. This is the new three-word catchphrase that replaces "Get Brexit Done." Are we really going to restock the empty shelves of Brexit Britain with the tears of Remainers' I told you so's? No, not really. Nothing. Nothing will change. How can you sack a government minister for failing to take responsibility when you already knew they were a bunch of useless nodding dog idiots when you hired them? Oh well, I'm just off to McDonald's for a milkshake and a Nando's on my way back to the sanatorium. Right, it's time for another update from that great repository of cultural well-being, otherwise known as Twitter. I was going to talk about Twitter's seemingly endless obsession with empty supermarket shelves. A battle continues to rage between those that think this is due to Brexit and those that don't accept that there are any empty shelves at all. Photos of empty fresh veg and freezer aisles in the Co-op are quickly shouted down as fake, or it is because fridges are just out of service.
Stop lying, you filthy Ramona liars.
To be fair, there does seem to be rather a lot of broken fridges lately. I suppose it could be down to global warming. Since I started recording the section on the Secretary for Holidays Abroad, McGrab, I couldn't help but notice that the rumours of a cabinet reshuffle turned out to be right. Rab was removed and his failures rewarded with another ministerial post. I didn't even bother to find out what it was that he was going to do. However, Twitter was affronted by the new appointment of Nadine Dorries as, and I can hardly believe this myself, Secretary of State for Culture. I always thought her to be a bit of a, well, you know, an attention-seeking sycophant after her appearance in the TV series I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I believe that her performance involved eating the anus of an ostrich. I mean, really, nothing says culture more than being forced to eat Big Bird's bottom. But let's find out what the Twitter sphere has to say. Alison K. Brown says that the only day you want to be reading this is April the 1st. Alex says, there's more culture in a pot of yogurt. Jake James says, Nadine Dorries and culture in the same sentence. The pantomime season has started really early this year. It's behind you. Des Ferris reposted that meme of an England football fan with his trousers down and a lit firework wedged between his buttocks. Well, you can't get more cultured than that. Man vs. Baby says, a Tory cabinet reshuffle is a bit like playing chess with dog turds. You can move the pieces around as much as you like, but you're still basically playing with... Matthew Anderson tweeted, Germany's culture minister is a trained art historian. France's minister wrote a book on Verdi. The new UK culture secretary ate ostrich... Oh, Well, I think we've already made that point, Matthew. Meanwhile, there's an unwelcome caller trying to get through to the White House.
Excuse me, Mr. President. I've Prime Minister Johnson from the United Kingdom on the line again, sir. He seems quite insistent.
The United what? Didn't that state turn Republican?
No, sir, it's not a state, it's a country near Europe.
He's not from the United Arab Emirates, is he? You do know we're done with that.
No, sir, it's the guy that signed the Northern Ireland Protocol and wants to renege on the treaty and thereby screw up our Good Friday Agreement.
I remember him now. That no good son of a gun. It's a real shame that my poor dog Champ went and died when he did. You could have chased that sucker off the White House lawn and bitten his ass. Now that is something I'd like to see on Fox News. You go and tell that no good limey wannabe Trump clone to call back later, preferably after my nap.
And how long is your nap gonna be this time, sir?
Well, about 3 days should do it.
I'm so sorry, Mr. President. He's got some special message concerning Her Majesty the Queen. Something about a portrait that his foreign secretary left behind in the embassy in Kabul.
Ah, goddammit. Put him through anyway. It's great to see that the Biden-Johnson special relationship is still flourishing. This is not the BBC.
Best Before COVID Corporation.
We interrupt this podcast to bring you breaking news. The Prime Minister has just announced that the new UK ration books are going to be an exciting shade of blue with a handy metric to imperial conversion chart on the back cover. Baroness Dido Harding is also going to be in charge of the app. The Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps, has announced that the government intends to reintroduce third-class carriages for the high-speed HS2 rail link. This will now be operated by the new Kingdom-class broad-gauge steam locomotives, running exclusively on British coal. Well, who doesn't love steam engines? And now, a quick word on behalf of our sponsor,
COVID Quarantine Cruises.
Are you fed up with not being able to travel to exotic countries? We have the ultimate solution. Kiss goodbye to Plague Island and say hello to unsurpassed luxury. As we welcome you on board HMS Hospital Ship Britannic, there will be no need for masks, social distancing, or any of that, because we've all got it. We will be cruising up and down the English Channel, delivering sunshine and happiness, whilst accompanied by our great friends from Border Force. Dance the night away to our house band, the Fabulous Pandemics. And dine in style at our food bank restaurant. We even give you your own personalised tin opener. If you are still hungry after that, why not enjoy a scrumptious feast at our midnight buffet, courtesy of Poor Kids Holiday Lunch Boxes.
COVID Quarantine Cruises.
From the people throwing a protective ring around your assets.
You are listening to episode 11 of the Al Morton Takeout. To be honest, I've never wanted to go on a cruise. For me, they represent an inverted celebration of inequality. That said, cruises are popular, especially with people of a certain age. One YouTuber rather unkindly commented that he could no longer watch The Walking Dead without mistaking it for a documentary about cruising. My own observation is that cruises are run to an efficient business model, transporting the already wealthy to where the money isn't. A good example was given by the dry bar comedian John Wesley Austin, who said that cruises are a great way to visit places that weren't safe enough to stay overnight. The boat sneaks into a harbour in Jamaica at 8 a.m, then rounds everyone up around 5 p.m.
Oh no, it's getting dark! Time to get the hell out of here!
He's a seriously funny guy and worth checking out. Well, funnier than me anyway. I'll put a link at the end of the transcript. Keen observers may notice how cruise ships like to give their boats exotic names, such as the Oceanic, Crystal Insignia, or Silver Crest. It's never something like the Petri Dish of the Waves, the Incontinence of the Seas, or Shark Chum Chardonnay Cruises. Or perhaps I'm just being a bit mean. It has been suggested that most cruises carry enough food to end world hunger, and I've heard cruise ships referred to as cathedrals for the obese and stupid. Basically, just floating Walmarts. Look, it's okay for me to say this stuff because, well, I'm slightly on the larger side myself, but after I made a comment on Twitter about how the shelves in Spain were still pretty well stocked, really, I had a rabid Brexiteer have a go at me and say, "You could do with eating a bit less yourself." And my reply to that was, "Well, yes, I suppose I could go on a diet and lose some weight, but looking at you, it wouldn't make any difference because you'd always be a deeply unpleasant person." From my own observations, the popularity of cruises may just be down to a deep-seated desire to be treated like celebrities. We all want to be someone special, even if it's only for a short break. I suppose on one level, it's just like a game of let's pretend, but for grown-ups. This brings me to another interesting element of the cruise industry. Speciality cruises, such as the Atkins diet people who want to lose weight by eating tons of meat type cruises. Really? Who goes on a cruise to diet? Maybe the type who receives an invitation to dine at the captain's table and then complains, "Ooh, all the money we paid for this holiday and we're forced to eat with the crew." Or they will go up to the purser and ask, "What time is the midnight buffet, darling? What time is the midnight buffet, darling? What time is the midnight buffet, darling?" Happy cruising. Right, before I move on, I just want to say one other little thing about the cruise industry, which I observed from being fortunate enough to spend a little bit of time, my family and I, over 20 years ago now, but we went to the island of St. Lucia, a former British colony in the Caribbean, in one of these all-inclusive holiday deals, and it was quite a scary experience, really. I got very sick there, actually. That's another matter. But my wife decided, along with me, that it would be a really good idea to go to the local market in Castries, meet some of the local people, try some of the local produce. It just seemed like a nice thing to do. And when we told the people at the place where we were staying that we were going to do that, they looked at us in absolute disbelief. But the penny didn't really drop. And we got this taxi and, you know, there were these dire warnings about make sure that if the taxi's all right, that you book the same taxi to come back. We went to Castries Market and I can honestly say it was quite a terrifying experience, especially with two young children. Not because the local people were unfriendly. They were friendly, but because we stood out so much because the poverty on St. Lucia is really quite extreme, really. We passed these massive cruise ships on the way in, and I looked at these cruise ships and thought, what are these people doing on St. Lucia? Because I didn't see any of them in Castries. I didn't see any of them in the local market. And actually, it didn't feel like an incredibly safe place to be. And then I realized that the one thing that these companies are brilliant at, and that is exploiting the local economy, making sure that there's this idea. I've heard people say to me, "You should go and visit, you know, these cruises do the islands good. The money trickles down to the local economy." Let me tell you, it does not. It doesn't. I didn't see any local money going
I didn't see any money coming off of these cruises, any dollars ending up in the pockets of ordinary local people. There were massive cruise ships where people were living the life of utter luxury, and they were moored next to children who didn't have any shoes, who were absolutely had nothing, had terrible diseases. And it really brought it home to me. And then I did get very, very sick there and got bundled into a taxi. And the taxi driver just took me to the hospital that everyone goes to. And when he saw how sick I was, he doubled the fare. That was another experience, I can tell you, because before anyone would see me, my wife had to pay cash to the cashier. Then they saw me. There's malaria on the island. But they brought a stretcher out for me. It had a tablecloth on it, which was covered in blood, and there was blood all up the wall. And they stuck an IV in me because I was seriously dehydrated. But I'm thinking, what the hell is in this IV? Is it even a clean needle? So I'm eternally grateful to these people. I mean, they saved my life. But the conditions they had to work in were terrible. My IV was hung up on, you know, those old-fashioned Victorian hat stands that you see on old Sherlock Holmes movies. It was one of those. And my wife, who's a nurse, told me that there was a man in the reception who looked to her as if he was having a heart attack, and no one was paying any attention whatsoever. So after about, I don't know, goodness knows how long it was, an hour or so on this stretcher, the matron, she came up to me and she said, "Are you feeling better, Sonny?" And I said, "You know what? I think I am starting to feel a bit better." She said, "Good, get off to bed, because we need it for someone else." You'll have to forgive my poor Jamaican accent. One of the reasons I might have a slight down about the cruises maybe is because of that, because if you want to see how the third world lives next to the first world, and how virtually none of the money trickles down, just pay a visit to Castries in St. Lucia, if you can afford it. Time to move on. Talking of which, I experienced a driver shortage with my own production company. It probably won't surprise you to learn that the music touring industry requires a special kind of driver, one who understands the loading of fragile but often heavy equipment. These people need to be well motivated, strong and willing to work all hours. It's a tough job. Our sound company had won a contract for part of a tour with a band called The Proclaimers. It tied in neatly with Glastonbury, and we were all geared up for the sound, lighting and transportation. The show was due to go out in just over a month when the trucking company called and said they didn't have a driver and would have to cancel. There were only a few companies suitable for this kind of work, but everyone was already engaged. I decided rather late in the day that it might be a good idea to take an intense HGV training course, and once I'd passed the test, I would drive the damn truck myself. To cut a long story short, I failed the test. I couldn't believe how difficult it was, and terrifying. In the end, the problem was resolved by tracking down my rogue driver and confessing I had taken and failed the test. Days later, he took pity on me and agreed to do the job, provided I gave him a significant pay rise. So when you hear that driver shortages are a new thing, they're not really. They've always been with us. It takes a lot of skill to drive these trucks, and I think there's a feeling in the industry that drivers have been undervalued for too long. Brexit has only served to make a bad situation worse. With this in mind, I was somewhat surprised to hear a government spokesman doing the rounds and saying that the driver shortage was in the process of being resolved, not by encouraging drivers driven out of the UK by Brexit, but by increasing drivers' hours and making the current driving test easier. It is not clear if these new Dumbo driving licenses will be accepted in the EU, because surely
they would want to avoid having low-skilled lunatics dashing around Europe behind the wheel of 44-ton trucks. I know I would. It does rather sound like a recipe for disaster, but it did have me wondering what the new test would be like. How easy would it be? And what kind of person would be drawn to the industry? I am sure that there are some promising candidates for the new, not-so-challenging HGV test, but I suspect that some of them may be a little more borderline.
This dashboard recording was smuggled out by one of our ministry's finest inspectors, who now appears to be in full-time therapy.
Oh, hello. You're the examiner blokey. I love these new Scania trucks, don't you? They've got a decent-sized cup holder and everything. Oopsie. What, these? Oh, that's me lucky fluffy dice. Oh, there's the review mirror. Is it okay if I put some music on? Okay, okay, I can see it's not your cup of tea. Anyway, who's your favourite band? I'm really into White Sabbath at the moment. My missus is more your ABBA type. I know, sounds much better when you're shit-faced. Oh, lordy.
Our prospective driver, aka Noddy Cup Holder, hasn't noticed that the examiner isn't allowed to engage with him in casual conversation. But at this point, his patience is starting to wane.
Do you watch Jeremy Clarkson? Oh, f*** it. This truck would really get his freak on. Okay, let's see what this baby can do.
That was a bit close. Don't worry though, we're quite safe here on the pavement.
Is it okay if I eat my sandwiches? I'm blinking starving. Did you want some? It's cheese and pickle. I haven't put too much pickle on because the missus says it gives me gas.
No? I hope you're not one of them weird ass vegetarians. Although I know some people are a bit allergic to cheese and that. Or is it peanuts? Now Luke, before you tell me I bloody well failed, I just want to say that I did see the tram, it's just that it was travelling a bit fast-like.
Right then, Mr. Noddy Cupholder Hendricks, let's take a closer look at these results. You failed to stop at several pedestrian crossings.
Luke, I already told you, I don't think there was a bobby in that pram.
You curbed at least three roundabouts and nearly hit a tram, for heaven's sake. Also, probably not a good idea to eat while you're driving, or to wind the window down to call out to your mates. Right, what else is there? Failed to successfully uncouple trailer. Hit a fire escape instead of backing correctly into the loading dock. Note, only minor damage to the vehicle. Health and safety loading procedures. Let's just call it a little bit sketchy, shall we? Right, I have a couple more questions for you. Where were you born, and do you hold a current British passport?
I was born in Dudley. I don't have a passport right at this minute, but I suppose I could get one.
Have you ever driven anywhere on mainland continental Europe?
Actually, no. I've never been outside of Dudley. Oh, hang on a minute, I tell a lie. I did once go to a Bananarama concert in Wolverhampton. They were bloody rubbish.
Okay, well, it is with great regret that I have to inform you that you passed. Congratulations. Normally, lunatics like you wouldn't be allowed anywhere near a commercial truck, but with Christmas coming up, and the ministry so desperate for drivers, well, everyone is a pass at the moment, even you, God help us. You may want to stay away from the Edgbaston Road, though.
Why? Is it a bit narrow?
No, it's just as I live near there, and I don't want my front lawn ploughed up. Good day.
It's nearly time for me to go, and I hope this podcast hasn't been too political. I've been told by people in the UK that they don't really like my podcasts, because most British people think that Boris is doing a pretty good job, and if the Westminster voting intention polls are any guide, they're right. But I hope Boris fans, that's what they call him, I've never heard him referred to as spaffer, will at least admire the way I steered away from the fuel crisis and scenes of Brits fighting on service station forecourts. It wouldn't do to mention that. Certainly not.
and I hope that they will also marvel at the way I don't also mention food shortages, driver shortages, crops rotting in fields, food processor shortages, the doomed fishing industry, doomed farmers,
red tape up the yin-yang,
lower food standards and employment rights, European Regional Development Fund not replaced,
freedom of movement gone,
the return of mobile phone roaming charges,
CO2 shortages, raw sewage being tipped into rivers, off-the-scale price inflation, useless trade deals, 150,000 dead, rampant corruption, destruction of the NHS, and the abandonment of the Northern Ireland Protocol. All of this has nothing to do with Brexit, and is completely down to the pandemic, and I'm not going to mention it at all.
I think it's all down to immigrants.
So that's it from me for now. I hope you enjoyed this episode and that you can find time to subscribe for more. As always, you can read further details, including a full transcript and credits, on almorton.com/takeout.
Was written, produced, and performed by Al Morton.